This is Pet Life Radio. Let's talk pets.
We are here live on Pet Life Radio and Instagram. And I was just saying, I see a client I haven't seen in years. And it's like a couple, maybe it's 2 months ago, one of my high school classmates hops on. And I haven't seen him since, we have our reunions, Beverly Hills High School. It's every 10 years. And he was at the first one. I haven't seen him since. I mean, the name comes up, but all of a sudden, I see his name popping up on my show. That is so fun. Hey, my sister's here. Now, she should be here. And she is. She usually hops on every week. Anyway, it's a gorgeous Sunday here in Los Angeles. Beautiful blue skies, nice and warm. Already got a chance to have coffee with my son and his kids. They live so close. So here for you, here for your pets. You know the drill. Any questions you may have, now's the time to ask. Advice is free. And I love to help you guys if I can. And if not, as I said, I will find help. So while you guys are, Jenny, you're looking for a peek, I'll help you do that too. And anyway, there's so many things to talk about. If you have any questions, anything specific, ask away. Remember, anything you think you want to ask, trust me, it'll be very important for you to know that anything you want to ask, other people also are going to want to ask. So just ask away. It's no big deal. In the meantime, while you're mustering up the courage to speak here on the show, let me, some things that I write down. I go through this as a weekly, sometimes it's even a few times a week. It's called the AVMA, the American Veterinary Medical Association Smart Brief. And it's really just things, little tidbits of information that we veterinarians need to know. It's kind of like what's new in the news, what's going on. And, instead of going through a journal, it's just the key features. And there are a couple of stories that always sort of ring home. And by the way, it should hold for you as well, because many of you have had these experiences, and it's prevention. It's like with almost many, many things, it's prevention is key. Prevention is better than treatment. Once you have to treat it, it's too late. If we can prevent it, that's the better solution. So, all right. So first of all, there's a story, and it rings true with many of you. Keep human medications out of reach. And there was actually a second story that came in I just saw this morning that I'll share, and I'll tell you what it is. First of all, ibuprofen, right? Antidepressants, obviously, marijuana, CBD, anything with THC, especially anti-anxiety meds, Tylenol. Tylenol, just so you know, it's not great for dogs. It doesn't work the same. Hey, Steve, but Tylenol will kill a cat, literally will kill a cat. So it's so important. And I had one such case. And what happens is it contains something called methemoglobin. So what happens is methemoglobin is part of the red blood cell that binds to oxygen, and that delivers oxygen to the body. Well, methemoglobin can bind the oxygen, but it doesn't. So it fakes the oxygen, basically thinking that it's going to be taken through and passed through all the organs and the brain, and it's going to deliver the oxygen, but it doesn't. So these cats, that because of the methemoglobinemia caused by Tylenol, acetaminophen, so what it does, it mimics the hemoglobin, and these cats are breathing fine. It's not their lungs, and yet you could see from their tongue. It was the scariest thing when I had a case a couple of years ago, and they're sitting and breathing. They're struggling to breathe. Their tongues are blue. And of course, I mean, normally you say, oh, there's some sort of lung obstruction, a lung problem. Everything was fine. And then some question to the owner. It's so rare. And I was saying, say, is there any way he got hold of anything like Tylenol? And he looks at me and he goes, oh my God. I go, what? He says he got home at night. It was late. Had one of those evenings where the head was spinning. And he decided to take two Tylenol. So he puts them on a nightstand, and one fell on the floor. So he didn't think twice. He looked around and couldn't see. It wasn't like obvious. So he just put another one out from the bottle, and he took his two Tylenol. Well, guess what? Guess who found the one that hit the floor? It was his cat. And he didn't realize it until he saw the cat struggling to breathe, bring him in. Anyway, the good news was, in this case, we got to it soon enough that with very difficult treatment, We were able to save the cat, block the methemoglobin, start him oxygen again, and fortunately, he turned out fine. But we were lucky. We were really lucky. Usually, you don't even know what's happening. You're not there, and the cat will pass. So be very careful with that one. So like the expression, what they said in this article, treat your pets as toddlers. Just like when you have a toddler, how careful you are around the house to make sure they go and get a thing, same thing. But here's the one from today, which I even caught my, if you know anyone that uses inhalers, okay, for asthma, for allergy, turns out that inhaler, the mist isn't dangerous. In fact, we use it all the time. We use it for cats that have feline asthma. But if a dog or even a cat gets a hold of the entire tube, right, the little thing, and eats it and breaks through, and so gets that liquid full strength, not as a mist, but the liquid, it can cause central nervous system conditions, tremors, increased heart rate, and is really, really bad for them. So be careful with those as well. Then another story that came out, and this was interesting as well, talk about asthma. Anyone who's had asthma, or especially when a child has asthma, what is the one advice that usually a doctor might give the family about asthma when it comes to pets? And they will say, you shouldn't get cats, because a lot of these asthma cases seem to exacerbate when they have cats. So all these people are like, yeah, we'll talk about that, Katie Pooh. That's a good one. So it turns out a literal study was done, and there was no significant difference between kids with asthma that have cats and don't have cats. So the bottom line is, if your kid is diagnosed with asthma and you have a cat, or you're thinking of getting a cat, it shouldn't happen. It shouldn't be a problem at all. Okay. So Katie Pooh has two good ones. Thank you so much. This is the kind of stuff that I love about this show. Number one, all the things to have. We just talked about what not to have around. You should always have some activated charcoal around the house. Okay, it comes in a liquid, and you can get it online. If not, you can get it from your veterinarian. It comes in like a little container. And when you have animals that may have gotten into something, and you can't necessarily make them vomit, especially with cats, you really can't make your cat vomit. There's nothing at home. With dogs, yeah, they use salt. I don't like that one. Try not to use it. There's hydrogen peroxide. That's a little better. That one I've used safely. Never had a problem, but it doesn't always work. Or, of course, go to the vet for apomorphine. But cats, you really can't induce vomiting at home. There's nothing you can do. But activated charcoal, what it does is it delays or inhibits the absorption of whatever the chemical was in the GI tract, the gastrointestinal tract, and that is a safety. So it's a good thing to have activated charcoal on hand. And then another great comment is that their city, and by the way, Katie, where are you? Where do you live? I'd like to know so we could share that. But dogs die consuming mushrooms on a walk. Now, in my neighborhood, there was a front lawn, and it always had these wild mushrooms. And I'm sure you've heard the story. Years ago, an Asian family was here visiting, right, and to the States, and they were hiking, and they saw these beautiful mushrooms, and they ate them, not realizing that we have very commonly, a lot of the mushrooms we see wildly grown are poisonous, and the whole family, I think it was the parents and two kids, they found all dead, and it was because they ate the mushrooms. So be really, really, really careful with that. So in Santa Clarita, they're having cases where dogs walk. So whenever you're walking your dog, and you see mushrooms, usually on someone's front lawn or side lawn, whatever it is, I always pull my dogs away because we don't know for sure. And you don't want to take a chance, not with wild mushrooms. It's not worth the aggravation. And yes, Sharon says that highly recommend using AirVet before making your animal vomit. Yes, I do agree. Also, why? There are certain cases where you don't want to induce vomiting. And maybe charcoal is a better solution. What are these cases? Well, for example, if a dog eats chicken bones, for example, right? Everyone says, oh my God, chicken bones, they're bad, they're terrible for the dogs. Now, once that chicken bone gets into the stomach, you're good. Now, should you want them to eat it? Absolutely not. Could it make a cut somewhere along the intestinal tract? It could. But you know, with chicken bones, if you make a dog vomit from something they've eaten that is sharp, then it got already down. They're good. When you make it come back up, it might cut the esophagus. And any veterinarian you ask would much rather do intestinal surgery than esophageal surgery. Why? Well, first of all, the intestine is much more readily available when you cut a dog open. It's there, the whole intestinal tract. Esophagus is in the throat and very hard to get to. Then you have to crack the chest. And that's a major, major surgery and very, See, that one I say for board-certified surgeons, whereas intestinal surgery, I do all the time. So most GP, well, I shouldn't say most, what I'm learning now, not that it's a good thing, is that with the popularity of board-certified specialists in almost every field, way more than we had 40-plus years ago when I graduated, is that so GPs were taught, we were taught surgeries that current students are not even learning. Cutting open the bladders and doing splenectomies and doing intestinal surgery and resection anastomosis, they're not learning these. They're being taught to send those to the surgeon. Well, guess what? They're not that hard. And we do them all the time. But it's more challenging, but way easier than doing esophageal surgery. So also things that are extremely toxic, acidic. Again, when those things pass, right, you're better off doing charcoal. Don't make them vomit, again, for the same reason. When you make a dog vomit, okay, what is the potential side effect is what's called aspiration. They go, eh, and when they breathe in, they can get some of that stuff down into the lungs. And this stuff, usually that really acidic, toxic stuff, is major poisonous for the lungs. You do not want them to do that. So again, go to AirVet or talk to a veterinarian before making a dog or a cat vomit. Well, you can't make a cat vomit anyway, but certainly a dog. Okay, do I recommend glucosamine for large dog breed joints or any specific supplements for arthritis prevention? Arthritis prevention, that's going to be a problem. You really can't prevent. I guess one way you can do it, because we see that arthritis has a genetic component, but also has a component of nurture. So it's nature and nurture. And if you want to keep a dog lean, you don't want to over-exercise them, especially maturing, growing dogs. Dogs that are, say, less than 2 years of age. When I see these gorgeous retrievers, puppies, you can tell they're young, and they're running alongside their owner who's on a bike, and they can be going for miles. That is not a good idea. You want to go to the park, get a tennis or frisbee, play with them. That's okay. Stop and go running for 15, 20 minutes. That's okay. But that persistent pounding, methodical, right, for miles and miles, that is not good for a growing dog whose bones and joints are being developed. So you want to be really careful with that. And I see that all too often. I want to stop my car and say, oh, what are you doing? That's not good for your dog. But you think they're going to listen to me? Of course not. Anyway, so that's one way to prevent. So now what we could do is control the degree, the arthritis pain, the production, the arthritis that is becoming progressively worse, that we might be able to help with joint supplements. Now, about joint supplements, a lot of the data is empirical. The scientific studies, all right, are may not be helpful. And I'll tell you the classic one with glucosamine. And that is they did put dogs, large breed dogs that had arthritis on glucosamine. There were two groups, one that was getting placebo, one was getting glucosamine. And they were using x-rays to evaluate. And interestingly, there was no difference. Animals that were on, animals not on it, et cetera. But was x-ray the best way to really tell? And the answer is no. It should have been CT or better yet, MRI. But that was too expensive to do for the study, so they're using x-rays. But one thing that caught my attention was when they interviewed the clients who had to fill out questionnaires, statistically significantly larger numbers of the questionnaires filled out by the owners of dogs who did get the glucosamine showed that they seemed more comfortable, they were less pain, they were more mobile. So that tells you right there, it may not be radiographically improved, but it is improving. So my dogs, yes, are on glucosamine. My big Labrador, who's soon to be 15, and he's still going upstairs. So I am an advocate of glucosamine, chondroitin, MSM. So these are things that I would recommend. And now, of course, you have the Librela. And again, controversial, yes. I personally, for my lab, I use Librela, and I see a dramatic difference. Also, my colleague, who uses it like we would recommend carprofen or meloxicam for the pain anti-inflammatory, he uses it a lot. And neither of us ever had a problem yet with Librela. I had one case where the dog was ADR for maybe a week. ADR scientifically ain't doing right. And this dog was a little under the weather and did fine after the week, no problems. And guess what? A month later, came back in for another Librela. So I have had what the company says is going to be the way it works. It's been used in Europe for a million doses before it even came to America to get USDA approval. So I'm still up in the air. What I do is like this. I will talk to the owners. I will give them options. I will tell them to do their own homework. And if they want to give it a go, let's give it a go. And that's how I do it. I don't want to say you have to do it, because if some of the stuff is real and there is a problem, but I'll go back to the first, I know we've talked about it here on the show, but for those of you that are new, the classic, one of the first cases where Librela was like blasted online was the dog that died 2 days later. And this lady went bonkers all over the internet, how terrible the drug was. But the company Zoetis, who makes Librela, took the deceased dog to a board-certified veterinary pathologist for an independent biopsy, okay? And they did a whole post-mortem exam called an autopsy. And guess what they found? Back to the spleens. It was a bleeding spleen from a splenic tumor, and it ruptured, and the dog bled out. And it just so randomly happened, it was 2 days. There's no way any drug is going to cause, not only cause a tumor in 2 days, but to have it rupture. So that was off the table. Now, did they ever recant that story, right? The publication online? Did, was ever an apology? Of course not. They don't do that. When you're caught in a, not a, a purposeful lie, but in a situation like that, did the owner come back and say, oh my God, I'm so sorry. I blasted this drug. Turns out my dog, nothing. So you got to be really, really careful. That's one thing about hearing things online. Everybody can complain, but when they get the facts, they never recant the complaint. So anyway, just think, you know. All right. 1.5-year-old puppy past week has been peeing all over the house. Rarely goes on the wee-wee pad. Do you think she might have an infection? Well, I would tell you this. First of all, it's a puppy, but 1.5 years. It is still technically a puppy, still growing probably. But I would say this is one of a few things. Either an infection. Oh, she. You just said the key. I was looking. Is it a male or a female? So if it's a female, there's a strong likelihood it's a urinary tract infection. And that is an anatomic problem. And yet there's more, but I'm noticing the time, 9:19. So, or 12:19 if you're back east. Anyway, time for commercials. We're going to take a quick break here on Pet Life Radio, and we'll come right back and we'll talk more about this. And we can talk a little bit during the commercial break as well. Mark, take it away.
Oh, sure. It's all fun and games until someone ends up in a cone. That's right. We're animals. Pet Life Radio. Let's talk pets.
Let's talk pets.
Let's talk pets.
On Pet Life Radio.
Pet Life Radio.
PetLifeRadio.com.
Okay, we are back here live. And a question came in, and here on Instagram, I wanted to talk about it anyway, so I want to wait for after the commercial break on Pet Life Radio so we can talk about it together. The screwworm. So right now, it is a very, very aggressive, dangerous worm. And just like regular flies who lay larvae, we call maggots, inside of open wounds, the screwworm larvae, their maggots, are much more aggressive and much more dangerous. And it's a big problem, and it really eats and ultimately can cause death. So it's a huge thing amongst large animals that aren't being cared for all the time. There have been cases in Texas and New Mexico of screwworm in dogs. We have not seen any here. And if you, interestingly, if you've traveled, especially to Mexico, you'll see you have to have confirmation from a veterinarian to get back into the U.S. Usually when animals travel, getting back, if you're an American person, right, and you leave the country and then you want to come back in the country, it's usually a piece of cake. But now with screwworm, you have to have a letter from a veterinarian on the country you're originating that there are no open wounds and no evidence of screwworms because they are very dangerous. So interestingly, there is a medication that's actually available online, and you might even be able to get it, I think, in a pet store. It's called Capstar. Nitinpirum is the drug, but Capstar is the medication we use for quick kill flea kill. It doesn't have a long-lasting effect. It's not going to prevent new infection. It's not lasting a month like the isoxazolines, but it's a good quick heal. It's like better than just giving a flea bath. And with the flea bath products out there, many of them contain permethrins and resmethrin, which can be potentially dangerous. Nitinpirum or Capstar is the way to go. Now, it's been shown that giving a Capstar and then repeating it in 6 hours can be a great treatment for the screwworm larvae. So if you are seeing open wounds, you really have to investigate them carefully, make sure they're flushed. And if you see little larvae, they look more striated. They look more aggressive anyway than regular maggots. I mean, look, maggots aren't good either, but I'll tell you one thing about maggots. Maggots can really clean a necrotic wound well. So they do their job, and then you can pull them out, click them out, wash them out, whatever, but not screwworm. They can be much more aggressive. So if that's the case, my female chihuahua doesn't like bathing, and how about just humping themselves? Would that be worms? I don't get the humping themselves. Give me more on that one, Cads. Okay, but probably not. No, the worms, these are worms. It's with an open wound. You look at the wound. If the wound is clean, you wash it. You don't see anything that looks like a little maggot. You're good. But that's what you're looking for. If there are maggots, then you want to, first of all, have the pet seen by your veterinarian, have them evaluate. But Knight and Pyrum, Capstar, is something you can get OTC, over the counter, and use. All right. Waving to a firewoman gone fit. I love that. All right. Next up, I'm glad you mentioned, Katie Pooh, about the screwworms, because I was going to talk about it anyway. Oh, that was Ivy Blue-Eyed. Sorry. So we talked about the asthma. We talked about the cats. That's all good. Oh, summer heat. Let's talk about that for a second. And being a gorgeous, gorgeous day today, for example, here in LA at least, really you want to start modifying how and where we keep our pets during the day and what to do, when to exercise, when to walk, when to run, when to hike, et cetera, et cetera. And it's, you know, it's really important to know, because dogs can overheat very readily. So you want to save the walks and especially the runs or hikes to early morning. You want to make sure they're well hydrated before. You want to read them well. See when they're really panting. They love us. So if we keep going, they're going to keep going. They're going to push themselves really to the point of exhaustion. We don't want to do that. So you want to take frequent breaks, preferably in shade, have some water readily available. One thing that I often do just to keep them a little cooler, it may work, it may not work, but it's not going to hurt. And that is a night before, take a bandana, wet it thoroughly, okay? Roll it up and stick it in the freezer overnight. And then in the morning, you'll get this kind of hard, you can crack it and tie it and put it around their necks. That'll sort of keep them cool as it's melting, and it'll cool them down a little bit. But the key really is plenty of stops, plenty of shade, and don't push them. All right, and early in the morning. Once it's warm, once it's hot, even sometimes a mile walk or a half a mile walk can be a lot for them. So even on your basic walks, sometimes you take your dog for a walk, you don't carry water with you, but during the summer, you want to keep your water. Now, another thing, pavement. Asphalt gets very, very hot. If it's, say, like 75 or let's say it's 90 degrees outside, the asphalt might be 120. You got to add about 25 to 35 degrees to each degree, because that's how hot the pavement gets, black asphalt. So if you wouldn't walk on a barefoot, then your dogs shouldn't be walking on a barefoot. If you are not going to walk on that hot sand, you're going to wear, you know, sandals or something, then it's probably too hot for your dogs as well. So keep that in mind. And also, given that, you got to realize that the evening, when the sun's going down and it appears to be cooler, that asphalt retains heat way longer than it becomes 7:30 p.m. So again, we need to know that. So it's a matter of being prepared, being cautious, being aware, and that can help our dogs. During the day when they're outside, if you keep them in the yard or the backyard, whatever it is, they need to have access to water. They should have water full time, okay? And shade. They need plenty of shade as well. So these are the things that one has to be really, really careful about when you have your dogs, okay? And cats are smarter. So I'm less worried about that, but dogs for sure. And then other things to think about when we think of hot weather, especially here in LA, where we're not commonly seeing mosquitoes, but now we're seeing more and more mosquitoes. And I mentioned before, I had the first case of heartworm disease in Los Angeles County in a dog that was born in and never left Los Angeles. Now, where'd that come from? Now, dogs have traveled back east during spring and summer, vacations, they go see family. Yeah, we'll see heartworm. When Katrina hit New Orleans, and we got so many animals coming in from New Orleans, all right? You're heading, overloading our shelters. 95% of them were heartworm positive. So fortunately, we don't have that problem. However, what they noticed when the Heartworm Society came out and investigated this one dog, was a golden retriever, it was near Forest Lawn, the cemetery. And they knew right away. It's like the light went off. And they said, oh, my God, of course. They went up to Forest Lawn, and they started lifting headstones. I know it's kind of gross. And there were literally thousands of mosquito larvae. So what they found is that, you know, it was all under the sun, but cemeteries, their water is being, their lawns are being watered so frequently, like several times a day. So down at the ground, it's, even though our air humidity is not high, it was very high down there. And that's what mosquitoes love. They love the heat, they love the humidity, and they breed. And they identified a new species of mosquito, well, at least new for us. And I forget the name. I know it's a weird name, either Culex or Culicoides, which is a standard mosquito, Quintophaciatus. And this mosquito was able to thrive in lower humidity than most mosquitoes. And they predicted then, which is so interesting, that within 10 to 15 years, and it's been over that already, we're going to have a heartworm problem here in California, Los Angeles. So my recommendation, as well as we're going into those warm summer months, if you are sitting outside chilling on a Sunday afternoon, and that's the time where it's quiet, hopefully you're being left alone, you want to grab a beer, you're sitting around and you just want to read, catch up on your news, catch up on your work, whatever it is. If you are swatting mosquitoes, then you need to put your dogs on heartworm preventive. Now, that means if you're going to go from NexGard to NexGard Plus, Credelio to Credelio Plus, Simparica to Simparica Trio, and that's flea tick and heartworm. So that is what you really need to think about doing. Talk to your veterinarian. I recommend getting a heartworm test first, a little blood test, usually done in-house. And the reason for that is that you want to make sure you're starting with a negative dog. And not only that, if you could prove a test that the dog is negative, then you can easily, you submit all the data to the company whose prevention you're using, the preventative you're using, and they will guarantee it, and they will help pay for your treatment. Treatment is extensive, a little dangerous, but it's not terrible. You use something called emeticide, and you have to keep them really quiet because it's killing the adult worms. You don't want a bunch of them to die at once because then they can form a clot in a major vessel, and that's going to kill the dog. So you have to keep them really quiet, usually hospitalized or in a nice quiet room. It's an arsenical compound. It's like arsenic, and it kills the adult worms. And then once they're dead, and then you can start using this to prevent and kill the microfilaria, which are the babies. So anyway, let's see if there's anything else before we say goodbye. We did talk about screwworm. Please recommend a hard food, my Yorkie Bichon 5-month old puppy. In my opposite account, morning about your live show. I see some of my followers are here. Oh, good. Thank you, Sharon. Love that. Diabetic male Yorkie, 9, has a low-grade heart murmur. At his checkup, has progressed to a 4. He is scheduled for an ultrasound. Any complications? He's diabetic. Well, no, you can. I mean, with diabetes, they're going to be on insulin. And you definitely want to get that echocardiogram, which is the heart ultrasound, done. And most likely will, if it's gone from a low grade to a 4, and that's 4 out of 6, by the way, we rate murmurs from a scale of 1 to 6 out of 6. So a 4 is up there. Definitely 100% you want to do an echocardiogram reviewed by usually it's the cardiologist, the veterinary cardiologist that does the ultrasound, called an echo. And then they will recommend what medicines based on the study. But you need to 100% keep the medicine, keep the pet on the insulin as well. Plantinella in your yard, it helps. Yeah, that's good. Citronella is a great mosquito in general for parasites. My dog likes to eat fabric. Okay, so there's something called pica, and it would be good to know how old the dog is, but pica is the eating of inanimate objects. It's something that's comforting to them when they chew, and we've got to be careful because if they tear off a hunk of fabric and swallow it, there's a strong possibility that it's going to lodge somewhere in the intestine and cause a blockage. And sometimes it gets stuck. If it's really long, if they get a really long piece, then we worry about 5 years old. Then we worry about something called a string foreign body, which is really, really dangerous. Why? Because what happens is it gets stuck in the front or back end. And now the intestine, trying to move it through, starts to come in closer and closer and closer and plicates like a long string, like an accordion. And then it gets stuck. And as it's trying to push and push and push, the fabric is literally like a saw, back and forth, and it can cut right through the intestine. So then you're looking at intestinal leakage, contents, major, major peritonitis, which is an infection in the peritoneum, in the abdominal cavity. It's a real, real dangerous problem, 100% surgical, and often needs what we call an anastomosis. So I would, whatever you can, because you know that she does this, then I would 100% remove anything. Look in the room, look wherever she is, if you're leaving her, and remove it. And if you need to, I mean, I know it sounds terrible. If you have a dog that does it, you know, sleeps on the bed with you, but while you're sleeping, she's eating away at your blanket or whatever it is, then you need to get a basket muzzle on her, or leave her in a carrier at night, or in a, you know, a large cage, or put her in an enclosed area separated by a baby gate or something where there's nothing she can actually eat except for her chew bones that are okay. So I would be really careful with that. You have to be more proactive to prevent it. That's important. And as I said, worst scenario, if you can't do anything, put a basket muzzle on. A basket muzzle is not dangerous. It's not a muzzle that clips your mouth shut. It's an open muzzle. They can drink water through it. They can pant through it. They can breathe through it, but they can't grab onto anything. And that might be. So concept of freeze dried. I love the concept of freeze dried. If you want to feed raw, you have two options. Number one, freeze dried. Number two is called HPP, high pressure pasteurization, or they sometimes call it high pressure processing. The idea is that the high pressure or the freeze dry are going to kill the bad bacteria, the Listeria, Campylobacter, Salmonella, all right, E. coli. You need to get those four out of the picture. And so that's what freeze drying does. So if you're going to feed raw, and I'm not against it, but I'm against it if it's truly raw and not done, something isn't done to protect them from those parasites, from those bacteria. So yes, freeze dried is great. Wild dog food, would that be a good idea? Good one. Again, when that means, is it wild, meaning it's coming from bison, it's coming from venison, it's coming from rabbit, totally fine. In fact, those are good novel proteins. And those are really good when you have dogs that might have food allergy. To feed them a novel protein is really a great thing to do. So not a problem. But again, if it's going to be raw, then you want to do something freeze-dried or high-pressure HPP to prevent the bacteria. Yes, and also said there are, Eloise comes back and says, there's some training to stop your dogs from eating the bad things. And maybe Vicky, when you see me, you can give me some hints. I know if there's a way to make the taste of things really objectionable, that they may stop doing it. But you have to catch them in the act a lot of times, or just treat the fabric with something, let them eat it when it's really bad, and hopefully they won't do it again. Okay, I think I hit everybody. If not, I'll be here next week too. So this week, I'm going to have a little fun real quick. I'm a little personal stuff going. I got contacted by a couple of my vet school classmates. Mind you, we graduated over 40 years ago. Some of them I haven't seen in 40 years. And one of my classmates bought a cabin in northern Idaho near the Tetons, I guess, part of the Tetons anyway. It's beautiful lakes. It's a lot like hiking. And about, I don't know how many, I think five of us, maybe six of us, are all just going to get together for a few days and have some fun. Looking forward to that. Travel as much as I really should. I feel guilty when I'm leaving my clients and my patients. So I don't travel that much. The only thing on my bucket list I want to do more of. Everything else I think is good, but I need to travel some more. Anyway, I took advantage of this thing. I'm going to miss a couple of days at work. And have fun with my guys. It'll be a lot of fun. All right. Anyway, any other questions? You can always reach me 24/7. You know that here on Pet Life Radio. You can send a question on my Instagram. I'm always available. If you want to get help 24/7, download AirVet. That'll give you live access to a veterinarian 24/7. And I will leave you with this. 92% of emergencies are not. If you have somebody to talk to, they can help you through it and see a regular veterinarian for much, much less money. All right. And that's my recommendation. All right. Have a great week, everybody. We'll see you next week. Same bat time, same bat channel here on Pet Life Radio and Instagram Live. And we look forward to seeing you then. Bye-bye.
Let's Talk Pets every week on demand, only on PetLifeRadio.com.